Good morning, everyone. Well, we're moving along in our consideration of angels, looking at different components. Andrew told me I can't say anything more about the coffee and stuff, so I won't do that. So we decided he was going to tell a joke about angels this morning. So one of our young people came up and told me a joke about angels yesterday. So I thought, well, I'll share it with you. And he said, well, what do angels say when they answer the cell phone? And I sat there. He said, oh, it's going to be a real knee slapper. And I said, well, I'm ready to slap my knee then. He says, oh, well, they say, halo. So, see, is that better or worse than the coffee and the cookies and stuff? I could chew out for that one, too. All right. Well, that was your icebreaker for this morning. We could do finger movements and those kind of things too, but anyways. Yes, the week is moving along and here we go. The angels are your friends. Actually, this is what I've come to in my life, at least, in looking at Bible studies on angels, is that I think as a younger person, maybe I was more a bit intimidated by angels following me around and aware of my thoughts and all those things that angels can do. But the more you look at life and the older you get, and sometimes a little bit more established we are and more experience that we have, and the more times we run into problems that are beyond our control, the more and more you start to depend on angels and come to realize that the angels really are your friends. They're God's ministers that we look at yesterday. They have been sent forth to minister for the sake of heirs of salvation, as Paul said in Hebrews 1. And those angels are there to help us in our times of need. And what we want to do today is have a look at some of those cases here in the Bible. Now, we started out yesterday, ended up with Genesis 18, and I got to tell you that really this is, I think, what probably first stimulated my interest in angels. Because we looked at yesterday in Genesis 18 that when the Lord, that's Yahweh, our capital L-O-R-D, appeared to him, that's Abraham, by the terebinth trees of the oaks of Mamre. So here's the Lord now appearing to Abraham. This is Yahweh, and Yahweh comes in the form of three men. And Abraham takes care of those three men, just like he would for any other strangers, possibly entertaining angels unawares, not realizing at least at this point what he was in for. But these three men then that are standing there are referred to as Yahweh. And see, that always interested me, because how could three men be called Yahweh? We got three angels that have come down now to talk to Abraham. But look at how accommodating these angels were for Abraham. And I'm amazed at this about angels. Angels are so patient. They're so kind. They're so merciful. They're willing to put up with our problems and our timeline just to accommodate us so that they can work with us within the realm of what we're used to. And the fact that Abraham wants to take care of them, wash their feet, provide them with a meal, all that was going to take a lot of time. And angels could have just walked in there and said, Abraham, we have an announcement to make to you and Sarah. And just said, forget the meal, forget all this other stuff. You know, we got to keep on with our business. And that isn't the way they are. You'll see that with both Abraham and with Lot. They were extremely accommodating and patient in order to work with Abraham within his realm. So, of course, they made the announcement, and they told Abraham and Sarah that they're going to have a child, and we looked at how Sarah laughed within herself and that angels can read our thoughts. But we also found out that, you know, Peter picks that up as a great example in 1 Peter 3 of when they read our thoughts, at least if our thoughts are good, that's a good sign. See, we only have to worry about them reading our thoughts if our way of life is one thing that we show everybody else in public, but really up in here, I'm really thinking about something different. And this can happen to any of us in the truth. That, you know, it can happen to, you know, some of our folks in our community that have gone around giving classes all over at Bible schools. We can be putting on a presentation one way, and we can have a totally different outlook about what's happening inside here. And that's one of the great fears that all of us should have, is that we never, like Paul said, after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. That was a concern that he had himself. But if we don't have those thoughts, if we really are true, and what you see is what you get in each one of us in our behavior, that we're really walking in the family of God towards the goal of the kingdom, then the confidence that we can have is that the angels know what we're trying to do. And even if we mess it up, and even if we make a bad mistake here and there, they're not there to blame us. They're not there to tear us down. They're there to help us do a better job the next time. And they're willing to pick up the pieces of mistakes that we've made and try to make something good out of them. That's the fascinating thing I find about angels. You'll see that with Joseph and his brothers. It doesn't bother them that, you know, people have evil intent and want to do all these things. They'll turn it around and use it for good, because it's the great confidence that we can have with angels. So we don't have to worry about them reading our motives and our thoughts. Now, in Genesis 18, when they made this great announcement to Abraham and Sarah that they really were going to have a child, and that the child was going to be born of Sarah, Abraham and Sarah would have a child, and they call him Abraham's only begotten son later on. Now, we know that he had Ishmael, but Ishmael didn't count. And the angels wanted to make sure. This was all orchestrated, Paul says in Romans later on. He says, this was done so that Abraham and Sarah and the Jewish community could never look back and say that Abraham and Sarah had worked something out so that God's promises depended on works of man. You know, and I would have never picked that up just reading through Genesis myself if it hadn't been for Paul's commentary. God couldn't afford to let Ishmael be the son, even though Abraham pleaded with him that Ishmael might live in his sight. It was critical that it be a child by faith, by the power of God, because Abraham was going to become the father of the faithful. And everyone in the end would be saved by faith, not on the basis of any works that humans would ever do. And so this was a critical time. And they made the announcement to Abraham and Sarah that they would have a child, and that this child was going to be based on Sarah's body being totally transformed in a way that was totally unnatural, because she was so old. There's no way she should have been able to have kids. Later on, you're going to see they go down, they meet up with Abimelech, and Abraham's worried. His wife looks so good that the king's going to want her. 90 years old, you know, that's pretty good. So I think a lot of sisters here would be hoping for that someday. And the good news is, it's coming. Yeah, well, anyway, it's fun to see that, though, about Abraham. But what I found the most fascinating about this story is that we got three men who appear to Abraham. Three. This is the math part of me, I guess, that caught me as a young person. And these three angels are called Yahweh. And they're talking to Abraham about what they're going to do, and they make the announcement. And then they make a decision to leave. And they're going to go, well, where are they going? Genesis 19, where are they headed? To Sodom. And what are they going to do there? They're going to destroy Sodom. And the angels talk to each other and they say, well, do you think I should hide from Abraham what I'm doing? Abraham's our friend. Can I not tell him? This is his nephew Lot. Him and Lot separated because there were so many in their community, they couldn't afford to live together anymore. And now Lot's been down there in Sodom for a while, and we're going to go down there and wipe them out. We're going to rain fire and brimstone down on them, and Abraham's going to see it, and he's going to wonder, like, what's happening? And can we do this without telling him what we're going to do? And they have a little discussion. I find this really cool about angels, that they would talk to each other as they're working out the plan, make a decision on the spot, and they decided in verse 18, since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth will be blessed in him, we're going to use Abraham to grow a family. And we can't hide from him. He's our friend. And so they decide, look, I know in verse 19, I've known him, in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they may keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. And the angels realize they can't hide this from Abraham. They're going to have to tell him. And so at this point in time in their decision making, they make a decision. And they say, all right, the three of them get together and they say, all right, I'll stay here and I'll talk to Abraham. So one of them stays and talks to Abraham, and the other two walk down to Sodom. Which is why in Genesis 19, only two men appear to Sodom. One of them is still back there with Abraham. And while Abraham's having this discussion now about, well, what if there's 50? What if there's 40? What if there's 30? You know, it's fun to watch that this is how God's angels work things out in our lives. And although it's very visible back then, because angels were actually appearing to them, it's really no different than the way it works out today. Angels must have discussions, and they must talk to each other about what's happening in our lives. And imagine when there's conflict in an ecclesia, and there's an issue that comes up at a business meeting or something's going on, and brethren and sisters aren't getting along really well. Imagine the discussions that take place amongst the angels. You know, where angels are trying to figure out how they can accommodate all the needs of the individual people. And, you know, at times we're working, you know, and we get into an issue and we start working against somebody and we think of them as our enemy or whatever. And yet our angel is sitting there talking with their angel, trying to figure out how they can work this thing out and how they can bring about some good out of this and change the pathways that we're heading down. And it's fun to look at it from their perspective because it helps us then to calm down a little bit and realize and issues that come up that you got to be aware at least that somebody is working with them too. They've got an angel that's working with everybody in our community, and we hope and pray that is the case. It's also fun to look at in Genesis 18 when the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come up to me, and if not, I will know. So, you know, here's an interesting case now that somebody in the earth had been crying up to heaven about the wickedness and the immorality that was down there in Sodom and Gomorrah and the effect that it was having on Lot's family. They knew something was really drastically bad. Now, maybe it was Lot himself. Maybe it was Abraham. We don't really know, but somebody had been crying for help. It wouldn't surprise me if it had been Lot. He felt like trapped down there in a situation. He'd gone down a pathway and didn't know how to get out. But the angels say, well, if not, I'll go down right now and see whether it's as bad as we've heard. And if not, I will know. Now, that's really interesting because that shows us in the kingdom age, we will not be omniscient. We're not going to know everything that's going on in the world. Angels don't have that ability. And these were probably high-ranking angels back then as well. And they didn't know everything. They had to physically come down and actually see if it was as bad as they had heard. And so the two angels go on down to Sodom to check it out. But Abraham still stood before the Lord because one of the angels still stayed with him. And that angel had that conversation with him about, well, what if there's 50? What if there's 40? And so on. Now, so then you see this, that Abraham goes on in Genesis 18 and he has that conversation. And his argument is, when he finds out that they're going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, he says, well, look it, you know, what if there's 50 righteous people within the city? Abraham's probably thinking he's got hundreds in his family. And when you read through the Genesis account that had stayed with Abraham, his community was still large, like had caused the original problem of the shepherds not having enough space. And so he's thinking, well, what if there's 50 down there? And he's figuring in verse 25 that far be it from you to do such a thing as this, to slay the righteous with the wicked. You can't destroy Lot's family with them. That's not reasonable for you. You don't act like that. So that the righteous should be as the wicked, far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And so the Lord said, well, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I'll spare all the place for their sake. And so on down the line. But it's fun to watch the way in which the angel was empowered to make some decisions here about, well, what if there's 50? And the angel talks with Abraham and says, well, if there's 50, you're right. We'll save the city for the 50. And then Abraham starts wondering, well, what if Lot's family did sort of go down a little bit? What if it's only 40? What would you destroy it for 40? And he reasons them down and so on. And you know the rest of the story. He gets down to 10 and figures, Abraham probably breathes a sigh of relief and figures, oh, 10, there's got to be at least 10 left in the family. And 10 people were saving in the city. And he probably went to bed that night thinking there would be no destruction of Sodom, which is a little bit sad when you look at what actually happened in Lot's family. But Genesis 19, the two angels come down to Sodom in the evening, and Lot's sitting at the gate. And look at how Lot treats them, the same way Abraham treated the three that showed up to him. We're going to wash your feet, I'm going to feed you a meal. This was very typical of what people in the Middle Eastern area do, and many of them still do over there in the Middle East area, the kind of way that they take care of people and make sure that you're accommodated, even strangers, of taking care of them and providing them with a meal and making sure they're okay for the night. But in this case here, it's interesting to see in verse 2 that when he asked them to spend the night and wash their feet and rise up early and go on their way, the response of the angels was, no, no, we don't want to spend the night in your house. We need to find out what's really happening in the city. We'll spend the night in the open square, which is where they probably really wanted to be. But it didn't take long staying in Lot's house for them to find out the city was as bad as they had heard, and eventually they do realize that themselves. He insisted strongly, so they turned into him and entered his house. That is interesting that angels will accommodate us like that. Even though they wanted to stay out in the city and find out what was happening out there, they actually turned in, spent the time in Lot's house, and look at what they did. They came in the evening, they spent the time with Lot and his family to go into his house, they wait while he prepares a meal for them, they spent the night in his house waiting for what they had been sent there to do, and then in the morning they say, now we got to get up and go. That's pretty patient of angels. When you think about it, with the power and the authority that they had, a lot of us would have walked in and said, Lot, we're destroying the city. Grab everybody you can, and let's see, in 1 hour, we're leaving. And that's the way we are today in our society. We're just very quick, fast, let's get it done, and we're out of here. No arguments, let's go. Be thankful we're saving you. And that's the kind of attitude a lot of us would have. You really don't deserve this, but we're cutting you a break, but you got an hour to figure it all out. They aren't like that, angels. And it's a good lesson to all of us to be a little more patient and kind with each other in our dealings, because you're training now to be angels. God doesn't want the 1 hour people in his kingdom, because you won't be able to work with the people in his kingdom in the age to come. We've got to learn to cut each other a little more space and slack. This is the way angels behave. They sit there, they ate the meal, they accommodated Lot, they developed a relationship with Lot, they spent that time, and then in the morning when it came time to move, then they said, all right, that's enough, and they're ready to go. So in the morning, look at how the angels treat him. In the morning dawn, the angels urged Lot to hurry up. They'd given him all night to find everybody in the city he could get in order to bring them out of Sodom. So they gave him an opportunity. And then you could see all the things. They gave him a great opportunity, because when they blinded the people of the city, then he really could have gone out there and found anybody who could, who was still righteous in the city. But they warned him in the morning, arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city. There's a line that they draw. We are going to wipe this place out. And if you don't get out of here now, you're going to be wiped out with them. So in verse 16, I find that this had to be put in the Bible for a reason. Lot lingered. Even knowing all of that, he still hesitates. He's hanging around, finding out, it would have been tough to leave. They would have had relatives in the city, other people they cared about that weren't on board for the kingdom. And they cared about those people. You could see that with his wife. His wife had even probably more than that she was looking back to. But the angels, look at what they do in their kindness. They take the man and his wife by the hands and the hands of his two daughters, and they physically walk out of the city with them. I mean, look at these angels. That's the kind of relationship we want to have with them. They're your friends. They're there to help you. They're going to drag us out of situations. They put roadblocks in our life, like they did with Balaam and his donkey, and they stop us from going down pathways that lead to destruction. They grab us by the hands at times, and they lead us out of situations where they know that it's a rough situation. You really don't want to be here, but they're going to help us get out of there. And they're extremely kind and patient and merciful. And this is what we're training to be. We're trained to be like them. So they bring him outside the city, and then when they get out there in verse 17, it goes even further. It comes to pass when he brought them outside, they said, look it, escape for your life. Don't look behind you or stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed. So you think, all right, they've done enough. They dragged him out of the city, let him out by the hand. They got to the point where they're outside the city, and they now say to Lot, look it, get out of here and keep going up into the hills, because we're going back to destroy the city. We're going to wipe this place out, and we don't want you to be destroyed in the city. So get out of here. Now, I think maybe some of us at that point, we would have just said, thanks, and hightailed it up into the mountains. But as some of the kids found out on the hike yesterday, coming up that last part of the hike, when you come up the mountain by the riverbed, oh, that's a bit of work, isn't it? That's not so easy to do, And then plus when you get up into the mountains over there, you run into sometimes wild animals. Up in the mountains is where you run into some of the thieves that are up in there that are hanging out in the mountains. So when they tell this to Lot, he should have been grateful and thankful they'd saved his life. But, he actually pursues this thing and doesn't even want to go up there. Now, many of us at this point, we would have looked at this situation and we would have just written Lot off. Let's face it, when you read through Genesis 18 and 19, honestly, brothers and sisters, if we read that story without New Testament commentary, we'd wonder, what are these angels doing? Why did they even care about this man? Did they just care about him because he's Abraham's nephew and that's it, the family connection? What is it? He's lost everything down there in Sodom. He's made bad choices. It was his choice. You chose to go down there, Lot. Now live with the consequences. You know, and that could be our attitude, brethren and sisters. And you sometimes see that in family life and ecclesial life. You know, you've made your bed, now lie in it. You made bad choices. That isn't the way angels are. They don't treat him like that. They don't, you know, belittle him like that. They don't, because they're in it for his good. That's the difference. If we don't care about the other person, then we do say that. Yeah, you chose to go that way, go ahead, now live with it. But if you care about the people, if you're compassionate and merciful and kind, and you really want these people to make it, you don't treat them like that. You treat them with kindness, and you bend over backwards to find some way of changing their pathways and bringing them back into the truth. And you find that Peter is the one who gives us the hint that, look, at here's what was really going on in Lot's head. Here's what the angels could read that we didn't read in Genesis 18 and 19. And here's what the angels can read in Lot that we can't read about our brethren and sisters and their children today. We don't know what they're really thinking. You really don't know. But here we find out that when Sodom was destroyed, that they delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man, that's twice now they called him righteous Lot, that Peter did, dwelling among them, tormented his righteous soul. See how Peter has to just keep saying it and saying it so you get the point? The angels knew his thoughts. They knew he was sitting down there in a terrible situation that he didn't really want to be in, and he was stuck and needed a way out. He probably had been praying for a way out, that God would do something in his life. It tormented his righteous soul from day to day, seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. And Peter's comment is that if God could do that with Lot, then he can do it with every one of us. That's the good news, that the angels are there to help us. As long as our mental attitude is such that we want to be a member of his family. We don't really like the stuff going on around us. We hate it. It torments our righteous soul, and we wish for the day in which we didn't have this body of sin that leads us this way. We didn't have all this temptation that's out there in front of us today. Lot wished he could get out of it and was hoping for the day in which he would be rescued. So then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. It's a great peace of mind that we can have about how the angels work with us today. And so Lot goes that one step further, and here they are at the edge of the city, and he should have gone up into the hills and gone on up there, but here again you see the accommodations of angels, the flexibility that angels have. Because, you know, imagine somebody's made a decision in life that you do with your children. You say, all right, Mom and I have decided, here's what you got to do. And then the child comes back to us and says, yeah, but, you know, can I just like have this? And some of us, our response is, nope, we've decided this is the way it's going to be. Well, can you imagine talking to an angel like this? You know, as Abraham had actually earlier, this is what you do when they're your friends. And he talks to them and he says, please know my lords. Actually, that's an interesting phrase there, please know my lords. If you check in Bullinger's commentary at all, if you look at Bullinger's book, he lists this as one of the 100 and some places that the Sephirim had changed the Hebrew text. They put a note in the margin that they couldn't understand how that could possibly be Yahweh. And so they changed it to Adonai because they figured Yahweh was still back with Abraham and this couldn't possibly be Yahweh right here. But actually in the Hebrew text, it's actually Yahweh. Yahweh had been standing before Abraham and Yahweh goes on down to Sodom and Gomorrah. That's the way the word is used. It's not one individual. It's a family name. A name in which we hope to be incorporated. The name that's above every name. And so actually Lot probably said to them, no, my Yahweh. He's talking to the angels and he realizes now these are angels. Indeed, now your servant has found favor in your sight, and you've increased your mercy, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, lest some evil overtake me and I die. Now, the angels had asked him to go to the mountains, and we would say, you know, look at what we would be thinking. We would be thinking, all right, if the angels got you out of the city, and the angels have done all this for you, they blinded the men of the city, they carried you out of the city, and now the angels say, go up in the mountains, you should have the faith to believe you're going to be okay in the mountains. And that's sometimes the attitude we have. Look at these angels. They're not like that. They accommodated Lot. They're so merciful and kind in dealing with the human situation that they said to him, they said, all right, verse 21, see, we favored you concerning this also, and that I will not overthrow this city for which you have spoken. So hurry up. I cannot do anything until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of that city was called Zoar. So they went over, and Lot and his two daughters went over to Zoar, and that's where they were going. Actually, his wife was headed there at the time. So this is what they're thinking. This is the accommodation that angels are willing to do. The way they can bend and they can flex and they can accept other pathways in life. They don't just create a rule and then everybody has to live by it. They examine the situation, they accommodate people, and when they can, they accommodate. And it's so fun to look at about angels, that this was not such a critical thing that they couldn't modify their plan. They can control that. We'll send the fire and brimstone down, but we'll even protect your little Zoar over there, and you can go over there. But as accommodating that angels are, they can't pass the line. And there is a line that we can walk over that they cannot agree with. And they had set up the situations in such a way that they said, look, if you really want out of here, you really want to be in the freedom to live as a family member of God, we'll save you out of this, but don't look back. Don't look back, because if you look back, then we really know that what you really want is you want to be back there in Sodom. And so they couldn't accommodate his wife. When she looked back, and that's what she really wanted in life, that her goal was not on God's family and God's kingdom, but the life that was there in Sodom. They drew their line, and they would not accommodate that. Now, that's a fun story to look at from that perspective. It shows you the flexibility and the accommodation of angels, but it lets us know, brethren and sisters, and young people that are here, that if our way of life is such that what we really want is this world and the things of this world, they cannot accommodate that. They can work with us if it really is vexing our righteous soul. It's tormenting us day by day. We really don't want this stuff of this world, but we're stuck in it right now, and it's causing us all this trouble. They'll help us out of that, but they're not going to be able to help us if we really want the things of this world, because where our heart is, there our treasure will be also. So it's interesting to look at it from that perspective. Now, look at all the things that you learn then about angels in Genesis 18 and 19. And this is why I say, and I think I started here as a young child. In my teen years, I just was fascinated by what these angels did back here with Lot and with Abraham. They can appear as normal men, so that we're totally faked out and don't even realize they're angels. They really do want to save us. That is their goal. They didn't enjoy destroying Lot's wife. That wasn't something that was fun to them. Imagine the angel that had worked with Lot and his family and individual angels that worked with those people. Imagine how disappointed the angel was when she looked back. I really don't think angels know the end result. If you think about that, the angel that works with you, does that angel really know whether you're going to make it or not? And just for a second, put yourself in his position. Suppose you had been assigned to work with you, or to work with one of your children for that matter, or whatever. Would you want to know ahead of time if they weren't going to make it? I mean, look what happens to the motivation. Look at us as parents, those of us that have children. Imagine if an angel had come and talked to us and said, well, you know, I've got six children, all right? And I can save three of them, but three of them just aren't going to make it. And then look what that does to the way you treat people. It wouldn't be good to know that. We have to live and work in the hope that it can be positive for every person. That's what drives us in life. And I get a feeling that the angels are the same way. I bet they don't know. And they get frustrated when we make bad choices. They get frustrated when Lot's wife looks back and wants Sodom. And it's like, oh, that work that they put in at her and the efforts that they had done. And they probably talk to each other to help each other through those things. Because it would be discouraging. If they can rejoice, they can be sad. And there are times where we disappoint our angels. And we don't want to do that, brethren and sisters. We need to be present. The angels, they can read our thoughts. They need to be present to know what's happening. They don't just seem to like know all the things that are happening like God does. They're willing to reason with us. This is why we talk to God in prayer. They're willing to accept other pathways if it can be a pathway that can be accommodated. And so prayer is powerful. We talk to God. We ask for Him to allow the angels to go down a certain pathway, like David did with Achish yesterday, feigning madness before him, praying that God would accept that pathway. That was a choice David made. And all we can do is ask for God for help. Ask the angels to accommodate that pathway and hope that it can work. And if not, if it is a bad pathway, then stand there like you did for Balaam and his donkey and block that pathway. Don't let me go down that one. Don't let my kids go down that one. Don't let our ecclesia go down that pathway, because that's not a good way to go. And somehow block that pathway so we're not down there. And they really are willing to accommodate us, brothers and sisters. It's so fun to look at about angels. They can accommodate us within reason. But there are lines that are drawn. They can't just accommodate anything. They can accommodate us if it can fit within the game plan of what they're trying to accomplish. And they discuss with each other to make decisions. I found that fascinating when an angel would say to another one, should we hide from Abraham what we're going to do? And they came up with the decision, no, that wouldn't be a good idea. And they're extremely patient and merciful. These are the angels that are our friends. Now, as Abraham continued journeying, you can look at some of the stories in Abraham's life that even go beyond this, but remember, now Sarah is such a beautiful woman, people are starting to wonder whether or not when it gets the famines in the land and they go on down towards Egypt and they get down to Gerar, and Abraham's down there with Abimelech, the king of Gerar, and he's afraid that Abimelech's going to look at Sarah and say, ooh, Sarah, I'll take her to be my wife, because now she's been restored to a beautiful young lady. Evidently enough that a king would be interested in her. At least that's how Abraham sees her anyway. Maybe somebody else didn't, but Abraham did. But we do know that Abimelech did like Sarah and did take her. But Abraham and Sarah came up with the plan. You know, she's my sister plan. All right. But God comes to Abimelech in a dream by night. And this is the kind of thing angels do. When we go down pathways, the pathway to go down and say that she's my sister, that was Abraham and Sarah's pathway. And at the same time, they're probably praying that God will help them through this, because this was their attitude of mind. They're like David. They're not like Asa, just making up a plan and just figuring, oh, look at the cool plan I came up with. They're asking for God's help. And because of that, God gets involved. And even though that pathway wasn't necessarily one that we could look at and say, well, the ultimate faith pathway would have been to go down there and just accept that God will save you, they made a choice, and God intervened. He sent angels to talk to Abimelech in a dream by night and save them in that pathway. And this is exactly what we hope angels are doing for us today. We have to make choices. All the time you're making choices about what you're going to do, your job situation, the ecclesia, decisions in the ecclesia, those of you that are on arranging boards, parents with children, as moms and dads, you constantly sit there and have discussions about what are we going to do, what are we going to do? And what we want to do is take those to God in prayer, not just look at them as though, well, look at how clever that Sue and I were. Look at what we decided to do with our kids, and look at how it worked out for them. You're walking a line in which you're constantly begging God to do something in your family that you know you can't do. And it's beyond our control to do it. And so we ask for His help every day, and we plead with Him that the pathways that we go down will be good, that He will bless them. And if not, that He'll turn them around. He'll do something in your life to block that pathway and bring us back to one that's better. What else can parents do? And what else would God expect of us? He just wants us to trust Him and ask for His help. And so He certainly did that with Abraham. You can see that, how He saved him out of that situation. You'll see in Genesis 24, remember the story where Abraham's going to send his servant. He's going to send Eliezer back, and he's going to have him find a wife for Isaac. He doesn't want to take a wife of the Canaanites that were in the land, and he sends them back. Look at the confidence that Abraham had instilled within Eliezer, his servant, his Gentile servant, that this man goes back to Abraham's family in Genesis 24 and 7. And the Lord God of heaven, he says, when he's over there with Abraham's family, he's telling the story. This is what Abraham told me, that the Lord God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my family way back over at Ur of the Chaldees, who spoke to me and swore to me, saying, to your descendants I will give this land. He will send His angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. See, this was the confidence Abraham had in daily events, important daily events like this, that the angels were out there helping him out. And I said to my master, well, my master, perhaps the woman will not follow me. You can imagine, we would think the same thing. What if I go out there and try to do this and try to get this woman and she doesn't want to come along? But here's what Abraham told him. He said to him, "The Lord before whom I walk will send his angel with you and prosper your way." Right, imagine the peace that brings to your life when you really believe that the angels are going to take care of you. They're going to prosper your way. They're going to help you out. And they're going to bless your journey and provide you with success. And at the same time, we saw with Daniel's three friends, that they had decided that, look, if it doesn't work out, if God doesn't decide to save us, we can live with that. But either way, we're not going to bow down to your image, King. We're going to accept whatever God does. The angels are going to be there, and they will make the right decision. And so he was confident because, in this case here, Abraham knew that Isaac was the child of promise. He knew that Isaac would have to find a wife, that the seed would have to continue, and he had all the confidence that the angels would take care of it for him. In Genesis 45, I don't think you'll find Joseph to be any different a person. You just don't see Joseph actually mentioning the angels. But remember, in Genesis 45, when Joseph revealed himself to his brothers, and he said, "I am Joseph," in verses 4 and 5 there, "I'm Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt." He knew his brothers so well. He had been watching them, and since they'd even shown up from the promised land, they coming down to Egypt, he knew that their immediate response was going to be one of looking back at guilt and blame. As soon as they found out Joseph was alive, they were going to start pointing fingers at the brothers who came up with the plan. "You're the one who said, why don't we put him in the pit? You're the one that said, why don't we get him out of the pit and sell him? You're the one that came up with the plan of killing the animal and telling Dad that he was actually dead." And he knew his brothers so well. He knew that was going to be their immediate response, blame and guilt. You know, that's the human spirit. And look at Joseph's attitude, because he was aware of the angels. He knew God was working in his life. And this is what angels does to your character. You don't react like those kind of people that blame and point fingers and assign guilt. Instead, he says to them, "Don't be grieved nor angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." He'd learned the major lesson of life, that all the pathways we go down, whether we choose them or somebody else chooses them for us, God works with all those pathways. And if he continues taking you down a pathway, he's got something good in mind. We just don't know what it is yet. And Joseph patiently waited. He patiently waited. You know, it grieved him at times when he begged that the butler to tell him, "When I get out of here, remind him, you know, tell him that I helped you." He didn't understand what was happening in his life there. But finally, he could look back one day and realize why God had done this. And again, the brothers, just to show you how tough it is to be like a Joseph, even after they were told that, and they'd lived in Egypt for years with Isaac when he came down, they still worried in Genesis 50 when Isaac died. They were still afraid that now that Dad's gone, now Joseph's going to get us. Now he's going to tear us up, and now he's going to punish us for what we did. They were still living in that guilt. They couldn't understand that Joseph could really let it go. That's a warning to all of us, brothers and sisters, that we're probably a lot more like the brothers than we are like Joseph. Joseph let it go because he was so convinced that angels were involved and that they had directed the pathway of his life. And for those of us that aren't there yet, we're not convinced of that, we hang on to that guilt. We hang on to all that accusation and judgment in life, and we feel like, you know, we've got to do something like that, and that other people are going to treat us like that. And you're just blown away when you run across somebody who just lets it go, because they're convinced that you, as he said, "Look, I understand you had the wrong motive. You did it for evil against me. That's what you intended." So it's not about whether somebody's motives were good or bad. It's about whether God can bring good out of the situation. Sure, people are going to have bad motives when about things that they do in life. You're going to run into ecclesial situations, family situations, husbands and wives, where maybe the other person did something against me and they had a bad motive, or at least I think they had a bad motive. It doesn't matter. You can still let go of it because you know that God can bring good out of it, no matter what their motive was. It doesn't matter why they did it, and we can still let it go. This is how people react when they believe that angels are involved in their life. There's another fun story with Elijah, and this is another one. I just tried to show you some of the ones I find most interesting, of showing you how angels are our friends. But in 1 Kings 19, here's another case of showing you the friendship of angels with people, and we can trust angels and what they're doing in our life. You remember the story, the contest up on Mount Carmel, up in the north. Elijah's got this great plan. He's going to convert the nation. He's going to do it his way, in a sense. Withheld the rain for 3 years. Now he's going to send the rain. The big contest. God blesses the effort, sends the fire down from heaven. And Elijah goes running down the plain on his way down to Samaria, thinking the nation's converted. They're going to come with them. They're going to go into Samaria, and they're going to have a new world order. You know, we're going to have, the kingdom's going to be restored to Israel. And he gets down there, and he just bangs smack into Jezebel. You're a dead man, Elijah. And all that excitement and joy that he had, all those things he'd worked for years, just came to a grinding halt. And he thinks it's all over. He goes into depression. He's a depressed man at this point. And he just, like, he wanders out of the area, goes to run for his life, goes, where else could he go? He goes down to Mount Sinai looking for God and trying to figure out what's happening. But when he goes down to Mount Sinai, he's not like Moses, who stands there and says, God, please forgive these people, and if not, blot me out of the book of life. We find out in Romans 11 and verse 1 that Elijah went down to Mount Sinai, Paul says, to intercede against Israel. His attitude of mind right now, the pathway that he's going down, is one in which he asks God to destroy the community because only I am left. And that's the attitude of mind he has. I call that the Elijah syndrome, where sometimes we think like we're the only one left that can live the truth, and everybody's got to do it my way. And Elijah didn't see the broader perspective of the flexibility of God and how different people could live the truth in different ways. So he didn't appreciate somebody hiding prophets in a cave. Oh no, you got to get out in the open and stand, so then make a public stand if you're really for God. He didn't understand that component. God says there's still 7,000 in Israel that haven't bowed the knee to Baal, but he didn't see them. But even then, brethren and sisters, if we knew that was Elijah's mind, a lot of us would have written him off. And we'd just say, forget you, Elijah, we'll find somebody else. Look at how patient the angels are. He sits down under a broom tree there, and he prays that he might die. It's enough, he figures. I'm no better than my fathers. He's finally figured that out. And as he lay there under the broom tree in verse 5, the angel touches him and says, Elijah, arise and eat. You need to eat. The journey you're going on is a long way. You're never going to make it. It's like the people that get dehydrated around here at Hanover and end up having to be rehydrated. You can understand the problem. He's so depressed at this point, and he's so out of it, he doesn't even realize that he's not even worrying about his physical body. So in there, all of a sudden, the angel, look at verse 6. He looks, and there by his head was a cake baked on coals and a jar of water. Now, I don't think the angels just went, poof, and there's a cake baked on coals and a jar of water. The angels were taking care of him. They had put this there for him. They'd made this for him like they had watched Abraham and Lot make meals for them. And they had it all prepared for him, and he ate and drank and lay down again. And then the angel comes back again, and a second time, and touches him and says, arise and eat, because the journey is too great for you. They know where he's going, and they know why, and they're still so patient and kind and merciful with Elijah. And they let him carry this thing out, go down to Mount Sinai, and say his peace. And so, you know, that's the kind of patience that angels have in order to take us going down a pathway, they'll let us walk down the pathway, get to that point where we play it out, and then they'll redirect us and help us get on back on track. And the angels did that. You know, when God appeared to him down there, it did help him at least to get back on track and come back and realize it was going to be the still small voice, not the big contest on Mount Carmel that would convert the people. Another one with the case of Elijah, that the angel of the Lord had said to Elijah in 2 Kings 1 at verse 3, now rise and go and meet the messengers of the king of Samaria and say to them, it's because there's no God in Israel that you're going to inquire of Beelzebub, the god of Ekron. And the angel of the Lord said to Elijah, go down with him, don't be afraid of him. And you can see again that this is the kind of spirit that these angels had. They're compassionate, they're kind, they're working with Elijah, and they're trying to help him understand, it's okay, you can go down there. And they're very patient in the way they deal with him. Don't be afraid of him. They realize when we're afraid, and they're willing to accommodate that in the way they treat us. Now, for us, brothers and sisters, it's interesting to note when you get to Matthew 18 and verse 10, that the Lord Jesus Christ, you know, in terms of making this a bit personal this week, this isn't just Abraham, this isn't just Lot and Elijah, some of the big Bible characters. But the Lord Jesus Christ warned us in Matthew 18 at verse 10, in a chapter where he's talking to us about bringing back lost sheep so they won't be lost. He warns us, take heed that you do not despise one of these little ones. Even when somebody wanders down a pathway that maybe isn't good, and we can look at them and we can make up all the reasons in the world why, well, they chose that pathway, let them go, why do we care about them? That's not the way the angels think. They care about these people, and we've got to be like angels. You don't despise one of these little ones. For I say to you that in heaven, their angels always see the face of my Father who's in heaven. And I really believe that every one of us has been assigned an angel. You're going to see that tomorrow, hopefully, when we get to the life of Jacob, that an angel had been assigned to him, working with him his whole life. And this is the way it works. They know us. They get to become our friends. I get to the point where I talk to my angel because something happens and you know that they were there to stop something from occurring or to save us out of a situation. And we thank them because they're there to help us. They're ministers of God that have been sent forth for the sake of those who are the heirs of salvation. They're there as our friends. They're there to help guide us back onto a pathway. And when they stop us from going down a pathway that's no good and they bring us back around and redirect us, we thank them in life. And sometimes it takes years to where you can look back and realize, I think over time we develop a confidence so that when it happens right away, we understand. You get to a point where your immediate reaction is when something happens now that, wow, what's God trying to do now? What are the angels trying to do in my life today? Not, oh, this isn't fair, this is happening to me. You turn it all around and figure out, wow, what am I supposed to learn from this? What are they trying to tell me now? And that's the confidence that we can have with the angels who are our friends. So this morning then, just to finish up and where we're at, getting down to the last one, some of the lessons from us. Yeah, there's a whole bunch in there we just didn't get to today, and that's okay. It's all online somewhere. You can download the PowerPoints and finish them up yourself. But the subject is just so big. It's so huge. You just can't cover it all in six classes. But at least for us today, we can walk away with confidence that angels respond to our desires and our prayers. So don't give up, brothers and sisters. Don't give up. We continue to pray, and we pray that they will accommodate us, and we ask for their help and direction in the pathways, that they might accommodate our desires. They're extremely merciful, but they can't extend mercy if we're going down a pathway that is totally against the purpose of God. We've got to be walking in the family, walking with God, and then they will help us. And the angels are extremely patient with people, and now is the time, brothers and sisters, here at Bible school, in our families, and in our ecclesias, to practice living like angels, so that God will welcome us into his family because we already know how to live as sons and daughters of God.